How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, Monday, May 3rd, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. A very busy news day here on the site. Not just the Monday Night Wars, but the last of the Monday Night Wars for the time being. Impact is, in fact, moving back to Thursday nights, starting with next week's show, which means, I guess, 10 days between now and the next show, which... Would that be the go-home show for the pay-per-view?
Yes, it will.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, I guess we'll see what they do tomorrow, but failed experiment.
Yeah, failed experiment. I mean, inevitably, this was going to be the end result. We talked about it last night. I mean, they could have given the 8 o'clock time slot more than, 1 week and some promotion and things like that, but it wasn't working out. And I think that in the end they were going to end up on Thursday anyway, because they would have gotten killed in the fall by football. So yeah, failed experiment, that's about it. But there's another failed experiment that people aren't talking about, and that's the failed experiment they're continuing, which is building the whole show around Hogan and Flair.
I was gonna say the same people writing this show.
This, to me, the show tonight was just ridiculous. I mean, they can get a pop from that audience, trotting out Hogan and Flair, forever. I mean, I saw that in WCW, when they were going down. You trot out Hogan and Flair, you put them against each other, and people react, and you think, these guys are more over than anyone else. But it doesn't build for the future, and if it's still doing business, which it was through... the spring of 1999, sure, go ahead and do it. But when it stops doing business, then you got to move to something else. This hasn't done business in years, in a decade. They're still trotting it out, as long as that's the focal point of the show, they don't have any hope. And, I mean, they don't have any hope now anyway. It's like a rebuilding process. And unfortunately, one of the problems is, and it's a very impatient group, is that the only way that TNA is ever going to really make it and build is, through making some new guys and focusing on those new guys as the top guys, as the real top guys. And, and RVD is not a new guy either. And they're not going to do it. I mean, they've had 8 years to do it. They don't do it. They don't have the patience to do it. They're looking for the quick fix. They're looking for the brand names from the 90s. And that's why,
how ironic. They're looking for the quick fix after 8 years.
Well, they've been looking for the quick fix for most of those 8 years, because Jarrett was the same way. Jarrett didn't have confidence in people that weren't stars in the 90s. And, and Russo doesn't have confidence in people who weren't stars in the 90s. Eric doesn't even know. I mean, I guess he's starting to know now. Hogan doesn't know. He's starting to know now. But, I think there's a little bit of, interest in, as far as like Abyss and Desmond Wolfe and Pope and, several of these guys, they have interest in kind of making them stars. But when it comes to the booking meetings, the whole thing is like, who can work with Hulk, and I mean, once you're thinking who can work with Hulk as your main thing, that you're building long term, it's like you're fucked. I mean, that was a great philosophy, who can work with Hulk, in 1988. It was tremendous. It was okay. It worked at times in the late 90s, but it did stop working. And here we are, 11 years after it stopped working. And we're still, it's the only thing they got. And, to me, the most disappointing thing of this Monday Night Wars is that they came up with, no new ideas in the Monday Night Wars. I mean, no new concepts, no new... something to get people together, all that stuff that was so good with Nitro. And, that was all that Zane Bresloff stuff. And he's, he passed away years ago. And, him being gone, I mean, the one thing that this tenure of Bischoff was going to be was, people in WCW always told me, and I know firsthand, because, I would hear the ideas probably, because he would run the ideas by me, before he would run them up by Eric anyway. So, I mean, I know what ideas came from who, and as far as Bresloff goes. And people in WCW were always like, you know, Breslov's ideas, you know, were you know, as far as the promotion end of the thing, were always like, you know, the key reasons, one of the key reasons why WCW was ahead. And I mean, with him gone, I mean, there hadn't been one. I mean, the biggest promotional thing they got is, you know, working, you know, bringing Bubba the Love Sponge on, and that turned out to be a fail, another failure of this week. So,
show opened up with today and Taz giving us the big news, which is they're moving back to Thursday nights. They said it was based on the feedback they'd been receiving. They listened to the fans, and they were moving Impact back home to Thursday nights starting May 13th. Clamoring, they said, the fans were for it to move back, and they talked about this.
Nobody was clamoring, but what else are you going to say? You have to say something, right?
Sure. They were acting like this was the biggest, greatest news in the last couple weeks, at least. And they announced it. TNA Reaction was going to be starting again. They didn't give a date. It's apparently going to be late June.
June 24th.
Seemed to indicate it was going to be on May 13th, but it's not.
Yeah, it's June 24th.
So anyway, that's the great news.
Yeah, from, TNA Reaction's not going to mean anything at all.
No, it didn't mean anything on Monday. It's probably not going to mean anything on Thursday either.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't judge it from the first rating because they kept the show a secret, which, unfortunately, that's a spike thing. It's like, you know, if I would at least, like, give a couple weeks of promotion. You know, I mean, moving back to Thursday is not that big of a deal because the reality is they've been on Thursday anyway. So, but still, when you make a big move like that, God, I would want to go. I would want to, you know, give people 2-3 weeks of push. But, I mean, that's one of the deals with Spike. And that's been one of the reasons, I think that's one of the reasons why they've had problems, is because Spike is so quick to make those changes and then so impatient to give the changes a chance. I mean, the 8 to 10 had no chance whatsoever. It probably was going to fail anyway. But, you know, the fact it didn't even get a chance to me was disturbing. You know, you've got to at least give it a chance. I mean, the 9 to 11 was a failure, but goddamn, we knew that before it started that was going to be a failure. That was just common sense. I mean, everyone knew it, but you know, the people who made the call were like the only ones who didn't know that one going in.
Well, 8 to 10 ended up being just as big a failure.
Didn't have a chance. It had 2 weeks. It had one week where, you know, again, WWE couldn't make it work in 1 week. It takes a couple of weeks to get people used to the new time slot. The second week, WWE was running head-to-head with them. They didn't have a chance there. So they didn't give it a chance. It probably was going to be a failure, right? You know, I said that before. And moving to Thursday was inevitable. But, you know, if you're going to make a change, at least give the, you know, 2 weeks is not a chance to get people acclimated to a new time slot.
So then we had the 30-minute, it was nearly 30-minute segment here, opened up with Jay Lethal coming down to Flair's theme, sporting the Hall of Fame ring. Hogan had apparently given it to him this week after, of course, we did the big storyline last week where it was Flair versus Abyss for the ring. Abyss won. He stole the ring. Jay Lethal comes out. He does a Ric Flair impersonation. Pretty damn good one, I might add. And he's doing all the Flair mannerisms and this and that, and the people are going nuts doing the woo and such, and the real Flair comes out, and Jay Lethal proceeds to apologize to him, tell him he's the greatest of all time, tell him he's the best wrestler in the world, and then he gives him the ring back. So,
unbelievable.
The entire show last week, all out the window in this first couple segments here. Mind-boggling. So, he came off like a complete idiot, and Flair ended up slapping him around anyway. A brawl erupted. We had all the heels come out. Desmond, Beer Money, AJ. Then we had the baby faces run out. Team 3D, RVD. And went to commercial. Came back. RVD challenged the heels to get back into the ring for a fair fight. So they did. They brawled for another 5 minutes or so. Just kept brawling and brawling and brawling. Finally, Hogan's music hit. He lurched down the aisle. He began punching everybody. Everybody took gigantic bumps for him. He made his way into the ring. He laid out everybody until it was just him and Ric Flair. They did all of their usual spots. Flair bumped all over the place for him. And then finally, Hogan did his big promo, which, I don't know. He announced Machine Guns versus Beer Money versus 3D. That's fine. He announced AJ versus Abyss in a Monsters Ball match, which For an hour and 15 minutes, I was waiting for somebody on the show to explain what this was in case there was a single new viewer tuning in. They didn't. And then he announced that Desmond Wolfe was going to be getting a title shot against RVD. He didn't mention the poll. He didn't mention fan voting. He just made this match, which, if you didn't know about the poll, made absolutely no sense. And there you go. 35 minutes for that segment right there.
Yeah, they, Mike Tenay and Taz kind of brought up the poll.
They did later.
Yeah. They should have shown a graphic. They should have explained what the poll is, how you vote in the poll. Unbelievable, I thought.
What was amazing?
All those hundreds of thousands of votes, and then they don't really tell you what it is. WWE tells you how to vote.
Not only that, but you just wrote last week. You just wrote about the survey and about how fans had no idea what the rules were for these matches. They had no idea what was going on. And here we are on this show, and they learn absolutely nothing from that.
Well, this show was the perfect example because it was a whole bunch of 3-minute matches with a million run-ins.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the whole thing, and angle upon angle. I mean, it was like everything that they've been doing. You know, it's almost like, I mean, the one thing I can say is because the rating fell so greatly the next week, they at least this time when they did something different, they can go, well, we tried it and it failed, even though it really, you know, 1 week's hardly a representation. Unlike, you know, like a couple years ago with the Kurt Angle Samoa Joe thing, where they tried that and it was an overwhelming success, and then they, you know, went back to what they always do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and ruined whatever momentum they had, you know, for a couple weeks there.
We had the beautiful people talking about their match tonight, which, once again, six-woman tag, all the belts on the line. All right.
Now, I didn't understand this one. I understood this, okay? If it doesn't really matter because they won, but if Lacey and or Velvet Sky lost, then the tag team titles would change hands. And if Madison Rayne lost, then the singles title would change hands. But who would? And I would presume that whoever pinned Madison Rayne would become the singles champion. Although it was never actually said, that would make sense. Now, what if
Tara got the pin?
Well, what if someone pinned one of the tag team champions? Is it like the Freebirds, where two of the three can defend? I mean, they never even addressed this issue. They weren't going to win.
I just presumed if Tara got the pin on the tag champs, then the other two, since they're a normal tag team, would get the belts, and she'd be screwed.
I mean, it makes as much sense as anything else they've been doing with the women's championship, so why not? But, you know, I don't recall them saying it. But, again, it didn't matter anyway.
We had the promo by Douglas Williams talking about what bullshit it was that he was stripped of the title for a volcano, and he ended up challenging. He still had the belt, mind you, because it was also stuck due to the volcano in Europe, and he said that if Frankie wanted the belt, he'd have to beat him for it at the pay-per-view, so I guess that match is official for Sacrifice. They had a Jesse Neal and Shannon Moore versus Douglas and Kendrick. Matt Morgan doing commentary. And this is a great example of something written before the announcement was made that they didn't bother to change. Morgan said, if Hulk Hogan did not tell him who his tag partner was going to be within 7 days, there was going to be trouble. But there is no new show for 10 days. But I suppose we can forget about that. So Shannon did his hot tag. Jesse tagged in, speared Kendrick for the pin. And then, I guess, just to remind everybody that these guys are all jobbers, Samoa Joe came out again and destroyed them all. And that was that. It was a fun little match.
Yeah, and, I mean, Jesse Neal and Shannon Moore are now Inc., which, actually, I like that.
Inc. Incorporated, in other words.
Inc. Incorporated, yeah. Yes. Inc.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool name.
We had
and they're going to be facing Matt Morgan and whoever Matt Morgan's partner is on Sacrifice.
That's right. We had Flair giving a pep talk to all of his guys backstage. It was a good pep talk. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I like that. I like this segment.
Yep, told everybody that they were doing
poorly. What did he say about to Desmond about if
he said he better be giving it to Chelsea better than he was giving it to him.
Or else she'd be gone.
Yeah. Hogan did a promo and said he didn't expect to walk into TNA and have everything go awry. That was the line of the year right there. So he said he needed to find out what was up with Sting. We had more of the announcers plugging Monster's Ball with, again, no explanation of what it was. And they did, at this point, finally announce that fans had voted on the website, and that's why Desmond was getting the title shot. We had Anderson and Pope brawling backstage. Anderson laid him out. They later announced that... Actually, I'll just go right to it. Anderson comes out in a frock and the Pope's glasses, and he's doing a promo, and Jeff Hardy comes out, and somehow Jeff Hardy determined within the last 5 minutes that the Pope was not going to be able to wrestle tonight, next week, or at the pay-per-view. So, quite the diagnosis. He ended up challenging Anderson to a match at the pay-per-view, and Anderson refused, but then attacked Jeff. Jeff laid him out, ripped off his frock. The Anderson was wearing a tiny pair of trunks that read "Speak Into" on the back and the mic on the front. So I'm sure everyone can figure out what that means. And then Jeff manipulated his mouth so that Kennedy would announce that he would in fact face Jeff at the pay-per-view, provided Jeff makes it to the pay-per-view. He's in court in the next couple of days. So yeah. I guess we'll see what happens. We had the six-person tag, all the titles on the line. Tara is back on TV after burying the company online. And she couldn't get along with her partners. They all brawled. Ended up with the beautiful people pinning Sarita. And Tara and Taylor brawled. This was pretty bad.
That match was terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great start, though. Lacey Von Erich came out there and tried to do, like, a spinning kick and... I don't know what else she was trying to do, but it really didn't get better.
No.
And Taz, I mean, you can tell with Taz, I mean, he just thought this match was horrible. they did a double team DDT spot on Sarita right before the finish that was completely mistimed, and he was just like, that was ugly.
What was the? Oh, I think it might have been on Raw, where. Was it Raw where Michael Cole told Jerry Lawler to stop looking at the girls and he said, it's better than what's going on in the ring?
Yeah, that was a crummy match, too.
Yeah.
Wasn't it during Mark Henry and Zack Ryder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was an ugly match. We had Tara flipping out backstage, and she challenged Madison to a match at the pay-per-view. And Christy was like, well, you know, you haven't won a lot of matches lately, so why would they give you a title match?
Why would that matter in TNA?
Exactly. And
I mean, it's not like Desmond Wolf's won any matches.
Well, he got voted in by the fans.
Yeah.
She didn't. So she said...
But that's because there's been no women voting.
Well, she wasn't in the poll either. That's the other problem.
Yeah.
Said if Madison would accept, she would put her career on the line. They should have...
Like, people believe that.
Well, they should have built this up more as being her sacrifice for the sacrifice pay-per-view, but they didn't. So, as a trivia fact, as we talked about on the show yesterday, if Madison wins this match, it will be her first ever singles win in TNA history, and she's currently the champion. So
no, didn't Madison get one win?
It was in a tag.
No, she won the title in a tag.
I think her only other win was also a tag match.
Oh my God!
She is still yet to win a singles match.
That's amazing.
It's quite amazing. Beer Money against Machine Guns in 3D. This is a pretty fun match. And then Nash and Hall snuck down. It was a DQ. And they went after 3D for killing their buddy. And Eric Young ran down and proceeded to attack the babyfaces. The same Eric Young that the band turned on last month. He's back with them this month. So... I don't even know what to say, but they're back together again.
They needed a third guy.
There was no one else on the roster. They just had to undo what they did a month ago.
The two choices were Eric Young and Samoa Joe. That's what they came down to. So, you know, I guess people groaned at both, and I guess they groaned less at Eric Young.
I guess so. Yeah. Then we had Orlando Jordan, who at least was identified this week. That was a step up. Doing an Ozone interview, and his catchphrase is, swear to God, don't worry, it'll be our little secret. First guest, Rob Terry.
I can tell you some Orlando Jordan stories.
I don't know if we should tell these stories on the air.
I've heard some Orlando Jordan stories in the last week. God.
Well, we'll wrap this one up early then, and I'll... Anyway, he had Terry.
I'm not trying to like hide anything, but it's just him hitting on different various people.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So he had a cutout of Rob Terry, and they cut to the announcers. Tanay looked completely bored. Taz was just staring into the camera, and then he cracked a grin, and they cut away. I think that was on purpose. I'm never sure in this company.
It was on purpose.
And they... fans were hating this, and not a good kind of hate. So Rob Terry finally came out, and Jordan beat him up, choked him with a chain, dropped what appeared to be a very heavy flower pot on him, and this is going to be a hell of a feud.
Yeah, I mean, to me, okay, Rob Terry came out and like shoved him down, and then he like turned around and posed to the crowd, allowing him to get up and destroy him. I just thought, like, can you at least, like, set up your situation where the babyface doesn't look like a complete tool, you know? Like just don't make it like, well, I'm going to turn my back on him so he can jump me after I've already knocked him down. I mean, it's like, you know, I hated it. It just made the babyface look like an idiot.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
There's at least one of those on every show. We had AJ and Abyss in Monsters Ball. They finally announced it's no DQ, and weapons are not only legal, but encouraged. So they had a match. Finish saw Flair drag Chelsea down to the ring, and she was acting like she didn't want to go, and he was telling her to take her coat off. Abyss went to protect her, and AJ ended up hitting him from behind, and then hitting him in the gut with brass knucks. Not sure how that would hurt Abyss, but it did. And then he gave him a springboard high cross onto the tacks for the pin. And Chelsea revealed she'd been in on the ruse, and that was the end of Abyss.
Well, the in on the ruse thing, you know, it's like, that was okay when it was with the Pope, but, you know, you can't come back with it a couple weeks later. Although they did.
They did. Yeah. Then we had RVD and Desmond for the title. This was the revenge for all those fans who went and voted for Desmond multiple times. The match went 4 minutes. RVD pinned him clean with the frog splash. 1, 2, 3. And then once they got rid of that guy, AJ ran down, laid out RVD, flying forearm, and said he was going to get his rematch at Sacrifice. So I'm hoping that between now and Sacrifice, everybody votes Desmond Wolfe again. They just do this every single month, beating him in 4 minutes. There you go. We had.
I think that they're going to do a vote, but they're going to tape the match tomorrow, and it's not going to air until a week from Thursday.
So wait a second. Wait a second, they're going to do a vote.
I believe that they're doing another vote for the match that they're for the show that airs a week from Thursday on the 13th.
I thought the vote was once a month and it would be the first show.
But they're doing another vote now. I think go to the website, tell me.
All right, I got to figure this out.
Someone told me that they're doing another vote right now for the next TV, then they're going to do a title match on the next TV show, which would be taped tomorrow, which is really confusing to me.
That's going to be awesome, because once people find out what they tape, they're going to load that ballot box so that guy's got no votes. All right, let's see what we've got here. New TNA voting now online.
There you go.
Well, let's check that one out here. Okay. Thank you. Oh, thanks to you, the top 10 contender rankings were a huge success. TNA Wrestling...
Except for everyone who voted and got slapped in the face with that quick match.
All right, let's see. We got a new one here. Vote now. Who deserves a shot at the TNA World Heavyweight title? It does not have a time or a date, but there are a number of new names, so this must be new. We've got Jarrett Pope, who, as noted on the show, can't wrestle. So that's a good one to put in there. Sting,
well,
Abyss...
out for 6 weeks. It's been on the poll.
That's great. Sting, Abyss, Mr. Anderson, AJ, Hernandez, who's also out of action indefinitely, Rhino, who's never on TV, Matt Morgan, who's the tag champs, Brother Ray and Devon, Jeff Hardy, who may be in the clink, Rob Terry, Kurt Angle, and Desmond Wolfe. I'm going to vote for Desmond again. And and guess what? Guess who's in the lead? Desmond Wolfe, 21%.
Who's in second?
Jeff Hardy, who could be locked up.
So... I mean, but they're supposed to do another match. Supposed to do another title match tomorrow.
This is awesome.
For a poll that won't even end for unbelievable. Almost makes you think you're going to fix the poll.
It really does. Really does.
Except for the fact that they really didn't fix it for Desmond. And then the deal is, but they did script Desmond. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, when Jeff was, like, you know, starting to catch up, that, you know, they didn't make sure that Desmond won because they'd already written their TV show. That TV show would have made no sense with RVD against Jeff.
No, it would not have.
Not that it made a lot of sense the way it was, but it made more sense than Jeff.
That is awesome. Well, there you go, everybody. Now you know where to go to vote to screw up next week's show, if that's what you desire to do.
Yeah.
They're asking for it, so it's not like I, you know, can't say that they got it coming. But then we had the Hogan Sting promo, which actually my deal cut out. So what happened here in the last segment?
Hogan, you know, called out Sting, asked Sting what the deal was. You know, why is he doing what he did? And Sting went and cut a babyface promo.
He did. I saw that part.
Yeah, he loves TNA. He's been here for 5 years. And when Hogan was in WWF, you know, he was always protected. When he was in WCW, he was always protected. But in TNA, he is not protected. And then I don't know exactly where they were going because, well Hogan then basically said, you know, take the first shot. You know, it was Hogan. It was, like, really weird because, like, Hogan was making himself out to be, like, the Dusty Rhodes, you know, which, you know, actually there's a lot of similarities. I mean, it was Dusty Rhodes in, like, the late 80s when he was booking into oblivion because he was past his prime and shouldn't have been on top as the guy anymore. And here's Hogan doing the exact same thing and goes, take your shot, take your shot. And Sting didn't take a shot, and then Jeff Jarrett came out because Jeff Jarrett had been laid out the segment earlier. Actually, Hulk Hogan had found him sleeping on the ground and goes, what happened? And he said it was Sting, which actually is pretty good because if any of these guys, like, pass out or anything like that, they should just go, you know, what happened? And just go, it was Sting.
That's right.
So, it would have saved Marty Jannetty several times.
It would have.
So
let me get this straight. Jarrett came out and laid out Sting?
Jarrett came out and laid out Sting.
So it was 2-on-1 against Sting in that last segment.
No. Then Hulk took the baseball bat away from Jarrett and stopped him.
Nice.
And then they went off the air and just said, you know, we'll be back on a week from Thursday. So that was kind of what happened.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I guess
so you know, like, Sting's big explanation was is that he loves TNA and he loves the fans and you know,
he was mad at Dixie for fucking everything up.
He didn't say that. That would be an explanation you could come up with. When I'm watching it, I'm thinking, like, maybe the storyline is, like, deeper than I think, and it's like Sting's the only one who's figured out that Hulk Hogan's a rat, and he already knows it now, but everyone thinks he's the bad guy for it. But Sting, in fact, was completely cheered, so it was completely ludicrous. Or it's just Sting, you know, like last year, you know, when Sting turned, when Sting was supposed to turn, and then he did all the babyface interviews anyway and wouldn't be a heel. So I don't know.
They're just going to keep trying. You just got to find something that doesn't work, and you just got to keep doing it.
It's unbelievable. They've got this guy in Sting who they want to be a heel, and he just, you know, won't do a heel interview. And then they got this guy in Flair who they all want to be a babyface, and he absolutely will not do it. And they're just handcuffed by these two guys.
It's awesome.
What are you going to do?
Well, you know, I could think of a lot of things, but...
Yeah. We need to talk about Bubba today.
Oh, no. What now? Oh, his big rant on his radio show?
He went crazy on his radio show today.
Yeah, tell everybody about it.
He went crazy. I don't need to say more. He just went crazy on his radio show. He called Dixie all kinds of names. He's going to rally the Bubba Army against TNA.
That's right.
Because TNA is not worthy. And, you know, I mean...
They're a war, he said.
Yeah, but it's a war. And you could tell tonight, boy, I mean, you know, those people, you know what I mean? They ruined the show. By the way, did you see the deal with the fan who got arrested for threatening to, like, destroy Titan Towers or something because they fired Mickie James?
I did not see that one.
Somebody got arrested. It was in hold on. I'll get it for you.
Dave laughing at the potential terrorist act here.
Well, come on, it's, like, totally ludicrous.
Man,
because the deal is they tell the guy, you know, like, okay, WWE, okay, the person's name is Zaver I can't even say. It's someone in Brooklyn. Who
well, hold on. Let me wait. Spell what? It for me so I can see if he's a subscriber.
Z A V R P E Y G G U M B A R I. Sounds like some. Anyway, he called the headquarters 20 times last week, making threats to blow up the building, and that he was going to visit the building with a machete and a machine gun because they fired Mickey James.
A machine gun and a machete.
What?
A machine gun and a machete.
Yes.
Well, he's not messing around then.
No, not at all. So he was arrested on Friday, and his attorney described him as a wrestling fan who was not really going to follow through on his threats. He was actually held on $250,000 bond. Jesus Christ. Anyway, after they ended up lowering it to $5,000 when they realized that, you know, he really wasn't that dangerous. Let's see. He's the New York City police knew the guy, and he's known for being emotionally disturbed. You don't say. And he apologized for making the phone calls, and he said, "I'm sorry for wasting the time of the court." He told him that the judge told him that he could not make any contact with anyone who works for WWE. He could not go near the offices in Stamford, and he could not attend any wrestling shows. The guy forgot. I can't go to any wrestling shows.
Oh man, that's cruel and unusual punishment right there.
He can't go to any wrestling shows. Oh my God. So anyway,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, everybody. Don't threaten Titan Towers.
Yeah.
My God.
How come they didn't do that with Bubba?
What's the world come to? Well, maybe they still will.
What? Yeah, maybe they'll arrest Bubba for... he hasn't threatened anyone with a machete or anything like that.
Or a machine gun.
No.
Just
no.
The Bubba Army.
He's threatened to turn the Bubba Army on Dixie Carter, yeah.
I will say that when Bubba said what did he say? Something like he would do anything to see TNA fail. I was suddenly rooting virulently for TNA to succeed. This guy is just
something
else.
I'm always rooting for TNA to succeed. It's just becoming it's like rooting for some team that you know is never going to win.
Well, yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Let's talk about Raw here. Big Dave came out, and I love Dave. I'm going to be so sad when he's gone. He cut a great promo about what complete bullshit it was, this finish of the Last Man Standing match. He explained to everybody, slowly and clearly, what the rules of a Last Man Standing match were, which maybe can go to TNA and help fix that product. He talked about how you're supposed to be beaten so bad you cannot stand, and duct tape is ridiculous, and this and that. And finally out came, they announced that it was going to be Beat the Clock tonight with him and Cena, where the winner got to choose the stipulations for the pay-per-view match they're going to have. Said his match was with...
We still don't know.
That's right. Said the match was with Miz, and Sheamus came out, and he cut a good promo, talking about how he'd taken out Triple H. He'd actually won at the pay-per-view, unlike Dave. He should get the title shot, and challenged Dave to a match. Dave told him, "No, you lost. Get over it." And Sheamus told him, "Well, it's not over." So Miz came out.
He vowed to be champion. Sheamus was really good here.
Sheamus has been great for months now, actually.
Yeah, really good on this promo, though. I mean, I know, but he was really, you know, I just thought that, like, when Batista told him to get out of his ring, and Sheamus was just like, you know, "You have not heard the last of me."
I thought they were both fabulous in this opening segment here.
Yeah.
And then out came The Miz. And he had a piece of paper that read "Doctor's Note," and he said that
a little campy there.
You know, said he'd been hit in the face really hard and couldn't compete, but he had just the guy for Dave. Of course, it was Daniel Bryan. Miz told him to try not to get pinned in 30 seconds. The match actually went 5 minutes and 6 seconds and was highlighted by, I swear to God, Daniel Bryan put an Uma Plata on Big Dave. And the fans went nuts, like it might actually be a submission.
Well, no, they didn't go. It wasn't the omoplata. It was when he did the crossface. They didn't
understand
the omoplata.
An omoplata with the crossface. Sure.
Yeah, when he did the crossface. It was weird because it really, to me, most of this match showed just how badly that Daniel Bryan has been destroyed by the great booking on Tuesday night. Because they didn't react. They didn't react to nothing that guy did. They didn't cheer him like he was this great underdog. Nothing. But at about the 5 minute mark, you know, when all of a sudden they did get into him, right? Right.
Because he's
the end.
Really good.
It was because he's a good worker. Yeah, because it was a good worker and it was a good match. It was a pretty damn good match.
Yeah.
I mean, it was your classic underdog hanging in there, kicking out. I mean, it was the kind of a match that always works. And it took 5 minutes for this thing to work because the people have been so, whatever the word is, on Daniel Bryan. I mean, they have learned that he's the shits, you know, even though he's not. And it was it's kind of sad to see because it was, you know, that classic. I mean, Dave did Dave worked a great match with him, as did they both. I mean, it was a great match for what it was supposed to be. And
story of it was Dave was a big monster, and Bryan would go for one submission after another and get beat up, and then he'd try another one, and then he'd get beat up, and he kept trying and trying and trying, and finally they thought he might have a chance, or I don't know what they thought, but they got into that crossface, and then he finally got speared and powerbombed for the pin, and then Dave gave him two more afterwards, and this was good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Eve was doing a photo shoot. We had a Wayne Brady appearance and a Jillian appearance. And anyway, the point was after they left, Maryse showed up and hit Eve with the women's title and put her through the backdrop to set up something for later on. We had Edge backstage trying to set up some footage. I don't know if it was for tonight or if it was for a DVD or what it was for, but the guy kept telling him we can't use that stuff because you see, they're PG now, and all this stuff was rated R. So he said it was time to start an era of controversy again and vowed to do that later. And as a spoiler, he didn't.
And didn't do it.
No. Ted Jr. came out and did a promo about R-Truth and pretty much buried him. Said he couldn't sing. He made some money now, but the time was going to come when he had no money, so he may as well be as Virgil. So anyway, he said he was going to hire a personal associate at some point, and that person was going to help him slap some sense into Truth. We had DiBiase versus Morrison, which went like a minute before DiBiase bailed, and Morrison grabbed the mic and told him, listen, let's do this match. DiBiase didn't want to do it, so Morrison said, if you do this match and you beat me, I'll be your Virgil. So this spoke to Ted, and he returned. And they actually had a pretty fun little match. And finally, DiBiase went for the Dream Street. Morrison ran up the corner, kicked off, landed in pinning position. 1, 2, 3. And so, pretty good stuff. And then DiBiase went after him.
I thought that they were in each other's way a lot.
Really?
I actually wasn't that impressed with the match.
I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, they didn't. There was a couple of smooth moves by DiBiase at the end and everything, but it didn't seem like Morrison was in sync with him at all.
Then he beat him up afterwards, and Truth ran down to make the save. So Truth and Morrison apparently still a team.
Yeah.
We had the Cena-Jericho beat the clock match, but Jericho came out and said that he also had been punched out by the Big Show. He also had a replacement. It was Wade Barrett. Time to beat was 5:06. This was not quite as good as the Batista match. But suffice to say, Barrett tapped out to the STFU and with 28 seconds left. So I guess in a TNA booking alert, the babyface has won the right to choose the stipulations for his championship defense at the pay-per-view. I don't know. I guess we'll find out what it is next week.
I thought that, you know, given, you know, the limitations and everything, I thought that the match worked pretty well. I mean, like, Wade Barrett's not that good yet in the ring, but he carries himself like a big-time star and talks like a big-time star, and he's going to make it probably. And, you know, Cena tried to wrestle with him and everything, but it was a little clunky there.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, it worked. And Chris Jericho, just tremendous.
You know, yes, he is.
Oh, jeez.
He was awesome.
He was just great at ringside.
He's always great at ringside, like every single time.
Yeah.
Maryse and Nikki Bella. This sucked. Maryse.
It was only a minute, thank God. God, was it bad, though.
Yeah. Maryse almost killed her with a DDT and then said she had some photos from her newest shoot which she called Maurice the sexiest of sexy, and they were shots of her posing with an unconscious Eve. And then who should run down to make the save but Eve, totally healed. There you go.
Yeah.
I guess fighting for the title at the pay-per-view. Zach?
Or just whenever they get to the match.
Could be, yeah. This may not be a pay-per-view caliber battle, I don't know.
Yeah.
Zach was in the ring with Gail and Alicia at ringside.
Zach was great on his promo.
He was great, but nobody cared at all.
Oh, they treated him like a complete joke. I mean, did you see, like the announcers were just treating him like he was a goof.
Yes.
But I just thought, I thought he was, you know, he was really good. And it, you know, he's supposed to be doing that comedy gimmick of, you know, that he's completely like a total loser. And, you know, he said, bring on Primo. And instead he got Mark Henry.
The best part of this was when he said that he was single and ready to mingle. And Jerry Lawler, of all people, acted as if he'd never heard this before.
Yeah, loved the line.
Incredible.
Wants to steal Zack Ryder's line.
Well, note to Jerry Lawler. Bad idea. We had this match. It sucked. And Henry won. And then he left with Alicia and Gail. So I don't know if Alicia's turned babyface or what happened here. But
I don't think they do either. They just had to get him. They just, you know.
Couldn't find another babyface girl back there?
I don't think there's. I don't know if there is one.
Oh, man. Well, maybe she is turned.
Maybe. Yeah, but they need some heels.
Yeah. Jericho and Miz are apparently teaming up. They want to prove the Big Show was a fool for punching both of them and not respecting what they had done for him. Kozlov, we had a deal with Kozlov, Wayne Brady, Regal, Santino, and Goldust. It was the segment they have. It's like they have one writer who's just in charge of writing the stupidest segment he can at least once on every show. And
at least it was fairly short.
And at least it was the only one.
Yeah.
At least it was the only one.
Santino was dressed up in like an Afro wig like he was, I guess, someone from the Brady Bunch. Which I'm sure that's what it was. So he thought, you know, Wayne Brady was like from the Brady Bunch. Which, you know, I mean, I guess some people might find that funny. I grew up with the Brady Bunch and I didn't, but
yeah.
Whatever. And he did this thing where, he did the takeoff on Marsha.
Wayne basically alerted him that they couldn't be on the Brady Bunch because those people were all white. That was a line.
Yeah.
Appeared to be the punchline.
Wasn't that funny?
The Hearts versus Regal and Kozlov. Jericho and Miz did commentary.
Well, they did make, by the way, they did make mention. Did you notice, the one thing that I thought was funny was they brought up that Kozlov and, you know, that Kozlov and Regal had split up on ECW.
Yes.
And Regal said, well, you know, we've worked it out. And Santino said that, you know, like he knew they split up because he was one of the seven people who watched the show.
That's right.
I thought that was quite the line.
Well, hey, that show was doing better than NXT.
I know.
That's a sad thing. Hearts, Regal, and Kozlov, Jericho and Miz out there doing commentary.
They were great.
Yeah, they were. Kozlov was not. He nearly killed poor Tyson, yanking him off the top rope brutally. And ended up with Harry making the hot tag and putting Regal in the sharpshooter for the submission. And then Jericho and Miz laid him out. And that should be a great feud.
Oh, yeah. Well, and obviously it looks to me like Jericho and Miz are going to be champions pretty soon, which means that they can be on both brands.
Good.
So, which is, yeah, no kidding. That's great. I feel vindicated. Finally.
For...
Because I suggested when frickin' Chris Jericho picked Big Show that he should pick The Miz.
I see, yes. Well, they finally...
And he said that The Miz was not ready.
Well, now he is.
Well, he's more ready now than he was then. He was ready then.
Well, sure.
You know, I think it all worked out fine. But...
Edge... Oh, yeah. So, Edge comes out for the cutting edge and calls out Orton. Wayne Brady comes out instead. Challenges a bunch of the guest hosts. I think they were trying to get him a lot of heat, but... People just didn't know what the hell was going on. So
it was good.
Yeah, it was a good promo.
He did a promo better than, you know, most guys.
For challenging Bob Barker, he did a fine job. So Orton came out and...
Bob Barker and Mini-Me.
Yep. Immediately gave him the RKO, laid him out, and that was the end of him. And then they did this long promo with Orton and Edge where Edge was explaining that this was so weird. I mean, I realize they've got to try to make all of this stuff make sense, but Edge is in there talking about how, you know, I came back from injury, I tried so hard, and nobody accepted me. And meanwhile, they accept you. And I thought, that is the exact opposite of what's actually happening right here. The people,
doesn't matter. They have to have an explanation.
They do. The people were chanting RKO and chanting for Orton here at the end, so that was at least good. He wanted to reunite the team. He demanded Orton acquiesce. Orton would not. And anyway, they got into a quick brawl. Edge set up for the spear. And as he was going for it, Orton turned it into an RKO. It's funny because, like, Edge is setting up the spear, and I thought, you know, if they do a singles match, if Edge goes for that spear and Orton RKOs him in the middle of it for the pin, that's going to be the greatest finish. And then they did it here! They just gave it away for free on TV. I don't know. So, there you go. Now they're going to do a match, and now I don't know what the finish is going to be because that was the best one, and they just did it. But that was the end of the show. Orton and Edge are feuding now, and just seems very backwards to me with the whole dynamic.
One thing we didn't mention is that after Cena beat Wade Barrett, that he was ready. He was about to give his stipulation when Sheamus came up and laid out Cena. So I think that it's going to end up being a three-way because there's no one, you know, unless Triple H comes back for the pay-per-view, which means he'd have to come back. Well, they got 2 weeks. They got the 10th and the 17th. So they got next week in. Where are they next week? I just know Flava Flav, whatever is there. And then next week is Toronto with a commercial-free show. They got a couple weeks. But I think they're going to do a three-way, and I don't know what the stipulations are going to be, though.
Maybe if Batista's leaving, Sheamus can put him out, too.
Perhaps.
Should.
Yeah.
Good way to get a guy over. Yeah. Put out a bunch of dudes.
Yeah. That was pretty cool because he said that, like, you know, he was talking about how he did what Batista could never do, and that's put out Triple H.
Yeah. He did a great job tonight.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some news here very quickly.
A lot of news.
Well, let's start with Forrest Griffin.
Bum shoulder out of the show. That's all I know right now. No more in the morning.
This is the May 29th
against Antonio Rogério Nogueira.
Yep.
Boy, it's going to be tough to get a quality...
They don't need it.
Tough to get a quality replacement on this short of a notice. I guess they could probably find Keith Jardine.
They don't need it. They got that main event.
Well, no, the main event's really good, but I'm trying to think. I don't even know off the top of my head what's third from the top on that show.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is it doesn't matter what the semi-main is. Everyone's buying the show because of the main event and the commercial that they've been airing on Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, but you know, I've noticed that with UFCs that having a good semi-main makes a difference. You know, it's some people will buy, you know, like even Couture and Lesnar, you know, didn't do as well as I thought. And I think that was because that they had nothing underneath. So Forrest Griffin, you know, is real good. I think second from the top. I don't know if he's as good headlining these days, but I think second from the top, he's going to be strong underneath that. But he's had that bad shoulder for a long, long time. So
I would say 95% of the time you're right, but. The commercial and the 3 weeks of 24/7, unless it's like horrendous, which I can't even imagine. I mean, that one match is going to sell all the pay per views.
Oh, it's going to do real big.
Yeah,
it's going to do real big.
Strikeforce, what's the update? They got a big announcement tomorrow, apparently. Which is
big announcement tomorrow? Yeah, might be. Might be Fedor and Verdum. I know that's what they're working for June 26th in San Jose.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's expected to be a big announcement tomorrow.
So yeah, Fedor may be coming back. I guess we'll find out. But that would when I look at the lineup for some of these upcoming shows, it's like, man, there's some lineups coming up, and none of them are on CBS, and they may never be again.
They may never be again. We don't know. Yeah. Nothing's been said. Tennessee sent letters. Tennessee Athletic Commission sent letters to several people, Nick Diaz, Jake Shields, Gilbert Melendez, Mayhem Miller, and two others. I don't know who the other two are. basically requesting them to explain their actions. And, you know, there's a feeling that, you know, that...
Jason Miller going to say, I wanted a match.
I wanted a match, and these guys were too freaking stupid, and no one knows how to, you know, whatever. And they all beat me up.
That's what happened.
That's what happened, yeah.
That's what happened.
But Jason Miller was pulled from the Los Angeles show because it's kind of Strike Force's discipline, plus they think that he might be suspended. Now, Diaz is going to, even if Diaz, Nick Diaz this is, even if Nick Diaz is suspended, he's still going to fight in Japan on May 29th on the Dream Show against Hayato Sakurai. So, because that's, you know, the Japanese don't honor American suspensions. But, you know, when he will, you know, I wonder, because the commission's frown on doing that, though. But I guess since he already signed, I wonder how they're going to, they probably just let it go. And, yeah, so whatever, you know, whatever, you know, they're probably going to make their ruling pretty soon, but I think that there's going to be, I think there'll be some suspensions. I don't know how long they'll be.
And then we've got the Sacrifice lineup. We've got AJ versus RVD for the title. We've got Sting and Jeff Jarrett, Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy. Ink Inc. versus Matt Morgan and his partner. Douglas Williams versus Kazarian. And Desmond Wolfe versus Abyss in a Chelsea versus Ring match.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Guess we'll find out what that means tomorrow. Although I guess we can figure out what it means, but...
No, the winner, if Abyss wins, he gets Chelsea. And if Desmond Wolfe wins, he gets Hulk Hogan's ring.
All right.
Because Chelsea wants the ring.
That's right, she does. That's right. All right, let's do some of these questions here before we wrap it up today. Were WCW wrestlers post-Hogan generally considered independent contractors or employees? Post-Hogan?
I mean, WCW wrestlers are always independent contractors.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what that means.
I mean, considered. I mean, you know, it's the same thing as WWE. I mean, they were under contract and they had to do what they were told and everything. I mean, but they were classified as independent contractors by the company anyway.
This person here says, I've heard bits and pieces about the problems between Dusty Rhodes and the Four Horsemen, Flair in particular. Like him wanting Rick to job to Rick Steiner at Starrcade 88. Could you give some details as to what was going on behind the scenes?
Well, that was when, that was right when Turner was about to buy the promotion. Actually, it took taken over November 1st. And so Jim Hurd had taken over. Dusty Rhodes had booked. One of the things that Dusty didn't realize was that Turner, one of the things when he bought the company was that If Flair had left the company, Turner was not going to buy the company. That's how valuable the Turner thought that Flair was. Because for whatever reason, you know, Turner didn't know the name of too many wrestlers, but he did know Ric Flair's name. So Dusty was trying to get rid of Ric Flair at the time. You know, they were not on good terms with each other. And Tully and Arn had already left. And so Dusty booked Rick Steiner against Ric Flair for Starrcade that year for the world title, and his finish was Rick Steiner was going to win clean in 5 minutes. The idea being that Rick Steiner was a real tough guy, and, you know, if Rick was in the ring with him, you know, Rick was going to do the finish, or Rick Steiner would beat him up. They used Rick Steiner because they thought he was the toughest guy in the company, so it was kind of a shooter-type deal. And I think that perhaps the feeling was is that Rick Flair would quit at that point and go to WWE, and Dusty would win, you know, because Rick left. But anyway, Jim Hurd was there, and Jim Hurd was about to take over, and he panicked and everything. And actually, Larry Matisick booked what happened, which is funny because he was supposed to come in and book. But anyway, what happened was he was like, because Larry Matisick and Jim Hurd were on the phone, and Jim Hurd's like, what do I do? If Ric Flair leaves, if they're not going to buy the company and everything's going to fall apart, we don't want to lose Ric Flair. And Larry Matisick just goes, here's your Starrcade main event. Ric Flair against Lex Luger, and Ric Flair wins in 30 minutes, which is, in fact, what ended up happening because Ric Flair and Lex Luger was the big program, and it hadn't been blown off, and Flair hadn't won it yet. So that's what ended up being it. And then Dusty ended up being replaced as Booker, and then eventually was fired or quit or whatever and went to WWE and became the Polka Dots man. So that's the story there. So Dusty didn't win at the end.
Yeah.
Although he did come back 3 years later.
Any idea if Brock Lesnar will be cornering Cole Conrad this weekend in Boston?
It'd be Thursday. This coming Thursday. Possible. He's been Cole Conrad's corner in some of his fights. I think Cole Conrad's maybe had two fights so far, or three. I know he's cornered him at least in one, but I don't know the answer.
And finally here, with TNA moving back to Thursday, how long until Hulk realizes this was a failure and bails on TNA? Is the move back to Thursday is part of the process? And does TNA have plans in place for when Hogan does decide to leave?
I don't know, but I do know that someone who they were negotiating with was talking, this is about a month ago, and just goes, and was talking to, you know, the Carters, and just said, you do know that Hogan and Bischoff are going to walk out on you. And they were, like, really sad to hear that. And they go, so what are the plans, and what's the long-term plans? And they, in fact, had no idea. So maybe they have an idea now, but who knows? And who knows when that'll happen?
That's not good.
I mean, I think Hogan made a one-year commitment, and, we're only a couple months into that year.
Yeah. It's going to do it for today, everybody. Tomorrow, for the last time, the Monday afternoon ratings report. We'll talk about the final head-to-head battle between Raw and Impact. And then from there, it's back to Thursday nights for TNA. We'll be back on Wednesday, of course, to talk more news. It's Lucha Week here on the show. We got the Cubs fan on tomorrow afternoon. We've got Dr. Lucha on Wednesday afternoon. Todd Martin's going to be doing a show on Wednesday afternoon as well. Lance Storm on Thursday. Possibly two other special guests as well. So a lot of stuff coming up. New back issue of The Observer went up yesterday. New issue of Figure Four out tonight. New issue of The Observer out tomorrow. So tons and tons of stuff going up. Check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.